The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot-button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Hello, and welcome to Beyond Episode 582, brought to you by IGNPR. My name is Jonathan Dorman. I'm your host.
Wow.
This week, joined by Lucy O'Brien.
Is this like your bedroom voice?
No,
this is a new thing,
my NPR voice. I'm also joined by Brian Altano.
Brap, thanks for having me.
And Max Scoville.
Man, they turn the cameras off. This turns into some real ASMR stuff very quickly.
The audience wanted it, so I'm happy to deliver. Right. Lucy, if that were my bedroom voice, I would be single for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say anything because I didn't want to be rude. But
no, I appreciate that. For those who are wondering what we're doing here, this is Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation podcast. If you are just learning, welcome. We are now an audio-only show. So you can get us on all your usual audio platforms that you may have been listening to us before. iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Google Play, Google Podcasts, whatever they use now.
Zune
is also, if you watch Guardians of
the Galaxy. Real Player, SoundCloud.
Just any Wave player that you have.
QuickTime.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can listen to us on QuickTime.
Winamp. It really whips the llama's ass.
Ooh. Of course, you can listen to us there. We're also going to be on YouTube in audio form, so you'll see a static image for now and also get the audio show.
We keep calling this an audio exclusive show. I think or audio only. I think we need to call it like ear exclusive or something
exclusive,
like that.
Yeah,
we have to really, let's do some good.
Oral exclusive.
Yeah, raise the roof on this one a little
Perfect.
Bit.
Perfect,
you know? Yeah.
And for those wondering, we are, of course, a weekly PlayStation show. We record Tuesday. So if we miss any news on Wednesday morning, sorry, we'll cover that in the
next. Or Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, we'll get to it going forward. Since we're going into a new audio format, I thought we could start with a new segment that I'd like to honor in memory of Andrew Goldfarb, our long-forgotten executive news editor.
Rest in peace.
Right.
Yeah, sad to see him go. We're going to call this News Crunch.
Half was either like a 1920s orphan child or Andrew Goldfarb on his last day, hard to tell. And the second part was me doing an impersonation of him eating an apple on his show once.
I think you should have sampled the apple crunching noise.
Yeah, Ronnie Barrier, our video producer of the show, he made that for us. I'll ask him to get that actual audio file.
The inventor of the apple crunching noise actually is like really strict about that stuff.
Oh, you mean Tim Apple?
Yes. Yeah.
Captain Crunch himself.
On News Crunch, we'll break down for you the biggest news of the last week that we may have missed on the last week's episode. One of the big things, this broke on Friday-ish afternoon, Days Gone has finally gone gold. So that essentially means they can ship the game off to be made onto discs. Mm-hmm. They can produce it and can get out to us, and they can start working on presumably the day one patch.
Yeah. Sony Ben tweeted out a picture of their studio on what looked to be at one point the front lawn of their studio, which is now covered in 4 feet of snow, which I can kind of understand why they finished that game a little early, because there's nothing else to do.
They're just indoors.
And I think they can't leave.
That's why I think every studio should be in Edmonton. Like BioWare, like it just is. There's nothing. Have you guys ever been?
No,
there's nothing to do there. Mm-hmm. It's like a mall where there was a roller coaster accident, and that's like the thing to do in Edmonton.
The roller coaster accident.
Check out this site of this deadly roller coaster.
Good accident. That's horrible.
I mean, of course, I did that.
So Bend is a lot more beautiful, but right now it's buried in snow. So it looks like it was a good time for them because this game went gold earlier than most games go gold.
Yeah, it's almost 2 months out from release. It comes out April 26th, and as we had on the last week's show, John Ryan just saw 5 hours of gameplay. So obviously, it's shaping up pretty well. We've talked about going gold on the show a little bit before, especially when Spider-Man was announced as going gold. How do we all feel about that term? Because we don't report on it anymore on IGN because it's so like a games get day one patches now, or in the case of Anthem, it gets a negative 2-day patch.
We were talking about this a whole lot and how like there's this, you know, there still is that group of people who like to have a physical copy of a game on their shelf for you know, collector's sake or whatever. But yeah, you do get those day one patches, and the game that is frequently on the disc is a very different product from what you actually wind up playing. I think if you popped some of the biggest games of the past 5 years into your system and started them up not connected to the internet, you would get a strange, you know, strange thing there, you know?
I mean, they so revamped The Witcher 3.
Oh, yeah.
Its control scheme. Like, if you were playing that offline, you would have a totally different game.
You'd have, like, a different menu system.
I mean, Max, you and I were talking about Bloodborne, because we're always talking about Bloodborne, but there was a running joke around that game that when you die at the launch of that game, you had enough time to do like a set of like a 3-minute jog or some push-ups or something like that, just to sort of relieve the stress of getting killed constantly. But they patched the game a lot and fixed the load times and made it much more streamlined. Now it's not even a thing I think about. And,
I forgot that game came out with those load times.
Yeah, they were horrible.
That was in our original criticism of the game.
And it was just the logo that said Bloodborne and you just stared at it.
I wonder about how much of that also is that we're older now, so our perception of time occurs faster.
That's definitely possible. Yeah.
Like
when I was whatever, like 29 when Bloodborne came out or whatever, like that was, you know, that 3 minutes seemed like a long time.
Yeah.
I've moved on a lot. I'm getting old.
You've matured.
Yeah. It's
impressive. Obviously we won't have to wait too long to play Days Gone now, thankfully. JR's preview had me really excited for seeing that game like fully in action, seeing what the full adventure of it plays out like. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited we only have 7-ish weeks to wait for that. Moving on, though, if you want to play your PlayStation 4 games that you currently can play on your phone, you now can do that. PS4's Remote Play is now available on iOS devices, and there is a limited app on Sony Xperia phones.
Wow.
It's not available on Android phones right now, but you can...
Have you tried it?
I have not.
I was really pissed I couldn't get this to work.
Oh, really?
I downloaded the app and I tried to sync it and everything, and just for the novelty of it, it's called the
Remote Play app.
Yeah, it's called the Remote Play app, and it's a very...
It's not the PS4 second screen app, is it?
No, it's different. It's like a sort of a new thing, and it's...
They have like 7 apps.
Yeah, it's very bare bones right now. It just says start and connect, and it gives you like an 8-digit or 7-digit PIN code that you put in, and it just wouldn't connect for me, which is kind of a bummer. I was thinking about like the practical uses of it, and I don't think I would play video games with it, but it would be cool to sort of like buy a game, download it, realize I don't have enough room on my PS4, and then do storage management from my phone.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. I mean, just the idea of like poking around inside the OS of your console when it's at home.
That's the only practical thing I can like use.
Yeah,
I think
uploading saves to a cloud would be really handy.
Save management and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, your phone does everything else.
Yeah. I do want to see, like, a speed run of somebody playing a really hard video game.
Yeah, someone doing Bloodborne on their iPhone.
Yeah. I could try to play some Bloodborne next week if you want to do that.
That'd be great, So it's all touch controls. We were talking about this when they announced it. For me, it feels like it makes sense for the kids who are already playing Fortnite on their phones at school or whatever. Like, they just now, if they want to do it through their PSN profile, they can do it that way. Or they can even play Apex Legends now. Will you be great at Apex Legends? Probably not. But you can still play it at school during lunch if you want. That seems like the most obvious.
I mean, you could probably play like turn-based stuff pretty easily.
Yeah.
I could finally finish Persona 5.
So when this feature first launched on Mac and PC a few years ago, I played a round of Battlefront in New Jersey on my MacBook Pro, and it was like a slideshow, but it was still like fun that I could even get in there.
Totally.
Because I was like, I'm windowing into my PS4 in California from the opposite side of the country. And that was kind of cool. But it's not really there yet. But for very simple things and tasks like that, I think it's a good look.
Yeah, and there are already games like obviously something less pressure filled like The Witness on PlayStation Plus this month. Like that's already ported to iPhones and everything. So you could probably pretty easily play that.
What if you had a controller? Does it?
So it works with third-party controllers. You can't connect a DualShock to it.
Right, but if you had one of those like weird clamshell phone controllers.
I think some of those, there are some like third-party PlayStation 4 controllers that like via Bluetooth will connect to your phone and work with it. So
it's so weird.
Yeah.
That could be awesome.
Yeah.
Like that, I can see a lot of practical applications, especially if you travel a lot. You don't need to look around your PS4.
Yeah, or if they finally roll out like 5G and suddenly the phone internet is super fast.
Yes. Yeah.
Future arrives.
Yeah, it's a. I think it's more of a beta thing to me in my mind right now, especially with we're seeing Microsoft expand their streaming platform so much with Project X Cloud.
Yep.
And seeing all these companies just try to be on as many platforms as possible, this feels more like future-proofing than PS4 games on your phone. That's what you really want to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious to see how that evolves and how remote play evolves, especially with a new gen coming. To wrap up News Crunch, though, we, just before recording the show, figured we should mention Gearbox teased essentially a Borderlands 3 announcement at PAX East. They have a big show, main stage show, March 28th. They were teasing never-before-seen reveals, and they've been talking about Borderlands 3 in some form or another for years now. And the teaser image they used, it's a highway sign. It says March 28th, Boston, Massachusetts. It's clearly in the Borderlands art style, like the cel-shaded art style.
There's a border on the image.
There's a border, and it's in a land, and it says Exit 3 on it. So the presumption is we can finally stop saying Borderlands 3 is going to be announced soon.
Are you sure that's what it's teasing?
No, it might be.
It might be Aliens.
It might be pre-sequel reanimated or something.
Fucking with you.
It's no, it's, yeah, it's obviously Borderlands 3. Is anyone here a Borderlands fan or excited for this? Or
I'm excited for it. Like, yeah. I'm not a massive fan, yeah. But I'm looking forward to jumping back into that universe. And I also think that Gearbox really needs some good PR right now.
What?
And I think that it's the right time for this announcement.
Mm-hmm. I think Medieval Times needs some good PR right now.
Do you think Medieval Times gets all their PR through Twitter?
Through that Gearbox story?
Yeah, through that Gearbox. Yeah, it's a weird thing. Obviously, we'll have people going to PAX.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah, you are going.
I'm curious. I'm not excited. Borderlands has never clicked for me, and I've tried numerous times to make it click, and it's sort of like it's just I don't know what it is exactly, but I'm incredibly curious to see what Borderlands 3 brings to the table because we're at that point where like so many companies are sort of like aping what Borderlands did, the sort of co-op looter shooter, the shared world shooter. We've got Destiny, we've got Anthem, we've got The Division floating around. Like what are they going to bring to the table that's going to set them apart from that, aside from, you know, a sense of humor?
I'm with Max in that I'm not necessarily excited for the franchise because it's never historically been my favorite, although I did play a bunch of it. I don't know if it really connected with me. Like I watched other people around me just get hooked on it. But I'm more fascinated in like what happens to a video game franchise that is dormant for a decade and then returns, especially knowing what's happened to that studio up and down, left and right for the last 10 years. I'm fascinated to see how it looks, how it plays, what's new, what's different. If they're even going to attempt to compete with the modernized looter shooters or just like stick to classic Borderlands stuff. That's all that is fascinating to me as somebody who loves the industry.
We're in such a totally different landscape than when Borderlands 2 originally released, and just the proliferation of Battle Royale games alone in the last year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, will they try to lean into that? Is it just going to be four people playing together still in the same world? Like, who knows how they'll lean into it?
Yeah, I've talked about this on the show before, but there's so many things in the video game industry that you at one point thought would just be mainstays forever that just disappeared. You know, like if Valve said, hey, we have Left 4 Dead 3.5, 4, whatever it is coming tomorrow, I'd be just as interested because so much has changed since that happened. And it was also at one point a known quantity and something that you would think we would get a sequel every 2 years and then it just stopped. So, yeah, we'll see.
I think there's also that effect where something becomes so imitated that everyone gets sort of sick of it. But then when the sort of original returns, it's nice to see, like, I think Doom and Mortal Kombat are perfect examples of that, where like the most recent versions of those games have been so sort of true to the original while like shaking the formula up just enough that they feel modern, but like, you know, really defining what that experience is.
Yep.
And like with Borderlands, like, I don't know, like, are they going to do a battle royale? Are they going to do a shared world shooter? Are they going to do a hero shooter? Because, like, how long has this game been in development? How many iterations has it gone through? I mean, is this going to be like, what if it comes out and it's like an Overwatch clone?
Yeah. I mean, they did Battleborn. So
yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
They're hoping.
Did they learn their lesson or no?
We'll find out on March 28th. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting, especially with 2K. They have this and Bioshock along those lines of like long dormant franchises that at least the IGN audience I know like consistently asks. And anytime there's a like morsel of information, they're like, oh my God, I need to know what's happening with these franchises.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So we'll be curious to see if this actually happens and we actually see this game being real. That has been our first News Crunch. Thank you all for joining us. I'm having too much fun with the soundboard. Anyway, moving on.
That kid is so weird. He's like a weird.
Yeah, it's a weird. I don't know where that kid's from.
They all
from.
Had that same voice back then.
Yeah.
Those old-timey kids.
I think if their voices got too deep, they immediately had to become adults.
Yeah.
It was like a law.
That's how it worked.
So yeah. You could stay a child
put
forever.
To work.
It's like Peter Pan laws.
They were in black and white anyway, so they didn't know the difference. Moving on, I want to talk a little bit about what we're playing this week. I myself have not been playing a ton. I've been more like getting into some comic books, board games, so I want to hear from you guys what you've been playing the most.
I'm just going to give a little shout out to a game I played a couple of weeks ago, but I was in, under embargo for a while. The Sinking City.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is that Lovecraftian detective game. It looks cool. I don't know if you guys have seen any of the trailers.
I've been keeping an eye on that, actually. It looks really interesting.
I played a couple of hours. The devs came in and showed me it. And I love the Lovecraftian worlds. Like, I love the moodiness of those kind of, like, seaside areas with grizzled fishermen and, like, old bars with old men singing and, you know, everyone's grumpy and going insane. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a really cool world. And although the game didn't really shake up the formula too much, like, I've seen it does the whole, you know, the kind of rewind mechanic that you've seen in a lot of other games when piecing together a crime scene. Like, oh, I can actually see what's going on.
Right,
I've got, like, foresight, or I think this is called recognition. But it's cool, and I love the world. It was very cohesive. I liked the enemies a lot. Like, they sort of present the enemies in kind of, like, broad daylight, so the enemies are like twisted monsters and stuff, like figments of the detective's imagination as he goes slowly insane. But the, you know, they're just sort of there, and it kind of reminded me of Silent Hill.
Yeah,
you know, when you're just walking down a street in Silent Hill, and it's just like, oh, there's like this completely twisted like mannequin thing walking towards me in broad daylight. It's that kind of uncanny thing that was introduced in Night of the Living Dead when you first see that zombie like shambling down the grassy knoll in broad daylight. It's really weird.
That's like my favorite kind of horror.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like this is a normal thing. It's like looking at security camera footage.
Exactly.
Where it's creepy because it's so sort of front and center, not because of, you know, something jumping out or something being obscured.
Mm, it's why Mr. X was so scary in Resident Evil 2.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge it. Like I only played a couple of hours, and it's coming out in June sometime. Look at my preview to get the exact date, because I don't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, it was cool. And I kind of like that these, like, you know, sort of middle-of-the-range games are still being made by some studios.
Yeah. Yeah, that there's room for that. And it's not – there's no expectation for it to be a billion seller or anything like that.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to be a AAA franchise, but there's room for that level of creativity.
Yeah, I feel like the bottom fell out of that type of game for a while, and we're seeing it coming back. So.
Yeah, with THQ and Midway and those sorts of companies going away. Yeah, it's nice to see that. Sinking City, by the way, comes out June 27th.
Thank you.
Anytime. We can now look things up, and we don't have to pause on a video show to
Sweet.
Do that. Brian and Max, what about you guys? What have you been playing?
Been doing some other sort of, you know, Arkham Horror, Lovecraftian nonsense in a little game called Bloodborne.
Yep.
Never heard of this one.
Yeah. So you guys talked about this last week, right?
Yes. Yeah.
This game from 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to be sweeping, like, all of the conversation. We talked about it a little bit. Kotaku's Jason Schreier
has
been talking up a big storm about it too.
Because he's playing. Are you playing it for the first time, Max?
I am still playing it for the first time.
Right.
Because I realized something about Bloodborne is that it is a game. I mean, the FromSoft games in general are games for people who are good at games and people who have time to play games. And I am fucking neither of these things. But for whatever reason, I've been traveling a ton this year, and I think like a bunch of games missed me. Like we didn't get copies of Devil May Cry. I wasn't sure if I would like it or not, so I didn't, you know, throw money at it. Resident Evil I want to check out. But like as far as like the kind of big experience of the year, I pretty much noped out of Anthem. I screwed around in Far Cry, but I was just like, I need something juicier, and I've played all the Yakuza games that are currently available on my current system, so there's so much for that. But Bloodborne, it does this amazing thing where I will play it for a while, get frustrated or sick of it, and then I'll just sort of – it'll sit in the back of my head and I'll kind of think about it and I'll want to go back to it. And like it has fully, fully gotten its hooks into me at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm – again, I suck at this game. I'm attempting to get good, and it's infuriating when I'm like, I'm enjoying this game, and people are like just – I don't know, condescending about it, because I'm like, I don't know what you want. Like – Fucking get married, buy a house, fuckers, pieces of shit. I'm so bad at the game. I am just in the Forbidden Forest right now, or the Forbidden Woods, or whatever. I've encountered the fucking the Snake Men. And,
I hate the Snake Men.
They suck.
Yeah, they really suck.
But I mean, I love this game because like I'll encounter something, and it's honestly made me sort of almost unpack a lot of what I enjoy about games because I saw this argument online about. Games, yes, without question, games should be difficult. And there's a part of me that's like, I don't completely agree with that all the time. I think that they need to have resistance of some kind. Like you've got to have like a challenge. But the challenge of Bloodborne that I don't like, honestly, the combat is what keeps me kind of like pushing against it because that's obviously what it's when a ghost comes out behind a shed and kicks my ass.
Yeah, that's a man.
That's a man. The bag man.
I don't think there is any like phantoms of the macabre in that
there's game. All kinds of macabre.
Isn't that what that game is? You can't tell me
that a dude in a bathrobe with a sack is not a ghost.
Yeah.
So I don't know
if they're ghosts.
They're phantasms.
No, it's a man.
It's something.
It's a creature man.
Can it be a corporeal ghost?
I don't think they're translucent silhouette of the deceased.
Why are you normalizing what a ghost has to look like?
That's true.
Okay, look.
A ghost doesn't necessarily have to be Casper.
Whatever this thing is.
I think they have to be dead.
There's so many things that some of them I'm like clearly
dead.
Like clearly that's a werewolf with a part of a loom who is going to kill me with it.
Doesn't mean he's a dead ghost.
He's got a lumberjack saw and he's going to hit me over the head with it. But like I mean I'm like that's a you know some of them I'm like that's a werewolf, that's a man. But there's ones where I'm like that's like a ghost sort of, but it's like a you know it's like a Haunted Hill ghost.
My favorite A24 movie, a ghost sort of. Yeah.
But I think it's so funny. I was thinking about this, where some of these enemies, you're like, oh, this thing's going to do something supernatural and surreal. And then it just kicks you in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like really aggressively violent. It's not like fluid and graceful and weird. It's like,
no, that's
gonna,
I mean,
like,
that's, I think,
kick your ass.
What's the kind of the scariest stuff about that game is sort of how blunt it is. Mm-hmm. I would say is the word.
It's so like, horrifying.
It is about smacking, you know, these disgusting wet wolf people with like heavy objects and bludgeoning them and beating them like that. You know, people come up and they slash at you and they hit you with big wooden shovels and shields. And like I'm replaying it now, too. And I think that now I'm starting to realize this is not just something that like I play because I love it. I play this game on like a sort of seasonal cyclical level like this. It feels like once a year around this time. There's a haunt that occurs in my brain. This time around specifically, and I shouted him out last week, but Jason Trier, I think he fell into the game for the first time a few months ago. And so there's been a big conversation about it again. Sekiro Shadows Die Twice comes out very soon, so I think we're all doing like sort of just like a, you know,
From Software refresher.
Yeah, a little like pre-workout stretch or whatever it is.
I just want to add, I haven't played it since it came out, so it's been a while. But I just want to say, Max, that I so agree with you, how it sits in your brain. I think the thing is with Bloodborne is that its world is so fully realized that you feel like you do feel like an intruder in it. Like you don't feel like, you know, so many games you feel like are molded around you as a protagonist.
Yep.
In Bloodborne, it's not like that at all. You feel like you've just stumbled across this place that happens to exist.
You're a hunter. Yeah. I mean, by the nature of your profession or ideology, whatever it is, you have invaded a place to murder the flora and fauna, and that is like that is very separate from being like save the world. It's like you're just kind of there. I'm sure the lore gets deeper than that, but you're kind of there to just like murder things.
Mm-hmm.
What I love about it is it has this margin. It has like a margin of success by accident. Like it's got the same sort of wiggle room for being a complete idiot at the game and still managing to like luck your way into things.
You can flail through that game and finish it.
Right.
And I say this to someone who finished
it. Well, you give me hope and you make me believe in myself.
Yes, you can do it.
But no, I mean, it's the same thing that I loved about Hotline Miami, which is another incredibly punishingly difficult game, but you can still sort of be like, I'm going to try that again. I want to get out there and do this thing again and see what happens.
Yep.
But in the case of like Bloodborne, I looked it up. When I started this game was last year when it was on PlayStation Plus.
Right.
It was
right.
There
that
we
was
saw
March, right?
That was January.
Was it that early?
We did a thing on Up at Noon about using Bloodborne to kick my depression's ass. It is totally my seasonal depression game. I've been getting up at like 5:45 every morning and sitting down with a cup of coffee and putting on my like seasonal depression mood light and then playing Bloodborne, which, by the way, having like a light shining in your face while you're playing that game is part of the reason I'm so bad at it, I think, because phantasms will come and I can't see them because it's dark. But
I'm playing the game this time with some new parameters. I've decided to like go in with like a different build and a different weapon because I've finished the game 3 or 4 times now. So I was like, it's got to feel fresh. It's got to feel new.
You've also got in with a totally different.
Yeah. So my newest thing, and I think a lot of people should try this, if you want to make Bloodborne really difficult, is have a baby.
Yeah.
Because Bloodborne doesn't let you pause and babies don't care about Bloodborne. Bloodborne. And so
it's called Blood Newborn.
Yeah, my daughter is fully crawling everywhere now and she's like crawling up on me. She's basically standing up. And I was on Bloodstarved Beast. I had no joke. This is like that classic Bloodborne tale or any From Software game where he had literally one shred of health left. And it was like one of those things. And obviously, that game is gambler's luck, risk reward, where you go, I could back up and heal. Or I could be greedy and I could strike one more time. And in that time, he, you know, bites your head off or spits acid down your neck.
That's when you scream.
Yes.
Like I have not, like, it's like a guttural scream, like, of just raw fury and, like, desperation when that happens.
And you put the controller down and you walk away. And for sometimes you never come back. And other times you come back in a month or a year. This time I came back 3 or 4 more times, died 3 or 4 more times, and was like, I'm going to try this again another day. I'm not ready for this right now, but I will return, you know. And what I love about that game is that, like, I play it a little bit differently every time I go in there. Mm-hmm. I upgrade different stats. I try different routes. I, you know, sort of speed run or go through different directions to fight different bosses in different orders. There's so much there in lieu of, like, having varying difficulties and all that, very sort of basic video game tropey stuff. There are so many ways to play that game differently to keep it fresh every
time. I think that's what I mean by like the margin of failure is like a game like, I don't know, Ghosts and Goblins is a fine example, or like Castlevania is like, that's a game about memorizing enemy patterns and knowing where things are and really just getting the timing down right. But I feel like it's too narrow and it's really almost a rhythm game.
Yeah.
Like it's, and this is what I don't like about straight platformers. I like when there's like a little bit of like sort of kind of back and forth, and Bloodborne has that just to an insane degree where I'm like, oh, there's like, and there'll be like an enemy that I've run past a million times, and for whatever reason, I step slightly towards him, and then I am at half my health.
Yeah.
Which is infuriating.
Yeah.
But, you know, better luck next time, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been doing this thing where, like, I'll get to, you know, I'll just kind of put my feelers out and try to explore a new area and gradually kind of pave way. And then every time I, like, unlock a new, you know, a new gate or a new ladder or an elevator or whatever, or find a lantern for fast travel, it's like this incredible sense of reward and victory, which is the thing that I think keep a lot of people coming back to it. They're all better at the game.
It's also I love that we're playing through this at the same time, because there's this very like third grade style lunchroom conversations happening between us where it feels like being a little kid again, where you'll tell me about stuff you found and I'll tell you about stuff I found, and it all sounds like lies.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, oh, did you know you can, like, if you go behind the farmer's shed, there's like there's a gem that you can use to put into your whip, and it makes you and you're like, wow, really? But cool.
I felt that way when I played it back in the day, because, you know, we were all talking about the secrets, and, you know, someone was like, you just need to go out to this area and get this music box. And when you have the music box, then you can, like, you know, defeat Father Gascoigne and all this sort of stuff. And I loved that sense of, but I just want to give a shout out while we're talking about Bloodborne. To Gibbs Raynock. He's an amazing artist.
He
does these incredible Bloodborne Souls artworks. Look him up on Twitter. His handle is @crowsmack. I just want to give him a shout out because my old apartment in Sydney was just covered in Bloodborne art from him.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
Like, he's so good.
Yeah, I was like recently looking for cool Bloodborne merchandise, and it basically doesn't exist.
It doesn't.
Because it's hard to encapsulate how great that game is.
So much like playing Bloodborne, collecting Bloodborne is also difficult.
Mm-hmm.
We figured this out. There are statues. There's some really high-end statues. I think they're from Prime Collectibles. I'm not sure about that. But they're like 1/4 scale resin statues. So if you want to buy them, you must collect like $1,800, which is sort of like if, you know, you were to get good at real life.
It's the Bloodborne of savings accounts.
Yeah. And then there's the Figma,
yeah,
which is,
which again, I just bought a bootleg version of on eBay because the real version goes for like $150.
Oh, wow.
But the bootleg's apparently just good enough and they're $22 shipped. But, just like something like Breath of the Wild, so much of that game is about the way you play it, and inherently with dozens of different costumes to try on and different skill sets and weapons, your character is going to look very different than your action figure. It's not like buying like a, you know, Crash Bandicoot toy, which is pretty much Crash Bandicoot.
It's going to be Crash. That was a weird thing they did with, I always thought, when they made Destiny toys,
yep,
because so much about it is, you know, customizing your character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, yep, here are the three main Destiny characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I went looking at like shirts and stuff like that because I was like, I'd love to have like a cool shirt to wear that has Bloodborne, but all of them just say Bloodborne. And it's hard to like take the art from that game and translate it. So I might just go on like Redbubble and just put something from the art book on there.
Bloodstarved Beast concept art.
Yeah, just something
sick
like that.
Dog.
Yeah.
You both sort of mentioned a thing. So, Brian, I think you said the Bloodborne of, or like the Dark Souls of. Like, that is a very common phrase that we use now these days, yep, to describe something being difficult.
But we try not to.
We try not to here, but everyone, like, in common.
Except for when talking about savings accounts.
Then that's like Bloodborne. I mean, like, even Crash Bandicoot levels have now been, like, the Bloodborne of Crash Bandicoot.
Chase Bank is now calling themselves the Bloodborne of banks.
That'd be a better marketing campaign, mm-hmm, than they probably
Comcast,
have.
The Bloodborne of cable.
Oh, God. And, Max, you had mentioned about, like, games needing to be inherently difficult to be good is like such a concept.
Yeah.
And well, I want to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, you know, difficulty is obviously subjective, but I think that there's this gamer mentality that like for a game to be difficult, it needs to be like necessarily twitch reflexes. You know, whereas like, I don't know, what about like solving puzzles and stuff?
Yeah, like of The Witness.
Not to be such like a wuss about it, but like not every game is good for everybody. Like, I mean, you see games that are not even like pass-fail type games, like creative stuff, like, you know, Minecraft or Mario Maker or whatever. And people get incredibly good at that. And then some people are like, that's not a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the negative side of, well, first of all, like most video games are skill-based, right? And so like that, I think, becomes a big part of it is overcoming the adversity of something that is difficult and pushes back to an extent. I think with the From Software game specifically, the get good thing,
yeah,
is either like something that's funny and sort of this like, you know, like rally call for people to champion together and like, you know, bring each other up. And for other people, it's like gatekeeping bullshit.
I agree. It's weird though, because I feel like the Soulsborne games are widely acknowledged to be objectively difficult, right?
Yes.
But I find that the community, that community is actually really,
they are,
welcoming.
Yeah.
Like the whole jolly cooperation thing is a real,
yeah,
thing that that community believes in. And I think that there are other, I hate to use the word, like fanboys or fangirls, that are much more gatekeeper-y.
For sure, for, yeah, sure. I think, too, also what that community is not so subtly trying to let you know is that overcoming adversity in a game like that and defeating a boss is one of the greatest feelings in the history of video games.
It really is. It's like almost as good as sex.
It really is.
Yeah.
And they don't want – I think they don't want –
I said almost.
Almost.
Yeah. They don't want to rob you of that.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's that risk reward that we talked about. That's a big part of it, is because it's difficult, but not insurmountable,
mm-hmm,
and somewhat achievable, that if you do actually defeat the Bloodstarved Beast or whatever it is that you're fighting, the feeling is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And there's really nothing like it.
I feel like fighting the bosses, I panic. I completely get frazzled and I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. And the only way I got past the Bloodstarved Beast was by summoning.
I think they are specifically designed to make you shit yourself.
Yeah.
Like they spit blood and the music comes up.
Yeah. I straight up panic, and I've always panicked, and it's one of those things that makes me suck at video games. And it's like, to me, it's sort of like those are the bosses in Bloodborne are sort of the midterms, and it's almost like the day-to-day stuff is sort of what I find more rewarding. Like opening a gate in that game is like where I get really pumped, where I'm like, it's that sense of exploration versus like direct combat and challenge, which is interesting. Like, I don't know, like it's navigating something. It feels more akin to like learning a route through a neighborhood than it does. Like, obviously, I'm going to go kick these monsters' asses. Like, that's the point of it. But
no, it's weird how most doors in video games are just like, it just says locked. but in Bloodborne, it's like locked. And it just means you can get around to the other side and open it up, and then it just makes the rest of your game easier.
This gate is closed by a device. What do you mean a device?
Something so obtuse.
Narrative device?
I think there's a time and place for games like Bloodborne and Dark Souls. Like, I think that I love that they exist. I love that they're hard. I don't want to see From Software like simplify their games, because I think that so many people play them because they're hard, because there is that sense of reward when you defeat, you know, a boss. But as a blanket rule that all games should be difficult, like, I think that's insane, because games are, they're apples and oranges. Like, sort of video games now are so complex and so different. There are so many variables, you know, there are so many different kinds. And, like, you know, Gone Home was a game that we all loved. I mean, I know that a lot of our community didn't necessarily feel the same way, but, you know, that's not a game that needed to be difficult.
Mm-mm.
Like, that is a game of...
No, would I put, like, six locks on the attic?
Yeah, like you know, Florence, for example, that's another, like, you know, a brilliant iOS game, sort of telling the story of a relationship that sort of dissolves, and it's heartbreaking, and it's still a game, and it's not difficult.
No, yeah.
It's emotionally difficult.
It's emotionally harrowing, for sure. I think that, you know, video games should be difficult as a really, like, old-fashioned mentality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's weird about it is that it's the same mentality that comic books are less valid than regular books because they have less words.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's such an outmoded concept, and it's weird because I feel like the sort of the respect for, you know, comics and graphic novels is totally that's, I mean, obviously if games want to be taken seriously as art, they would probably try to buddy up with more contemporary mediums like that. But I mean, it's weird because I don't know, there's some, like, in the case of Bloodborne, going back to this, like, I am playing this game like I read books that I really want to read but I'm having a hard time with, where I'm chipping away at it slowly and it's taking me a while, and occasionally I'll put it down and come back to it. Meanwhile, there's other books that I just burn through and I'm like, that was cool, next.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? Like, sometimes you have page turners, sometimes you have, like, fucking Ulysses, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think there's something to be said, too, for varying difficulty in terms of accessibility for the medium as a whole. Like,
yeah,
if every game were Bloodborne or Dark Souls or Sekiro or Sekiro, it would not be a medium that millions and millions of more people would be playing.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, we were talking the other day about, like, maybe there should be like a 2-year limit on it. When a game gets released, after 2 years, it gets patched, assuming the studio is still there, and it gets a bunch of quality of life options, and you get the chance to run through it. That said, in this specific scenario, we would be robbing Max of the fear he gets every time he...
Every morning at 5:45.
Every morning where he shits himself.
My morning
to the snake
shitting
people
hours.
On the floor.
My morning shitting hours.
My daily ablutions. It's weird. I think I've talked about this, where I wanted to get into Alien Isolation, but again, having this goddamn xenomorph, like, traipsing around after me.
I mean, that is a stressful game.
Right. Yeah. And there are PC mods that make it so that big stupid house cat leaves you the F alone. And I was like, that's something I would enjoy. I'd like to explore these levels and really just appreciate that, you know,
the world building.
Yeah. And instead of that, we just got a video series on IGN of Alien Isolation, basically adapted into a web series, like a machinima, which I have no interest in, because the thing I want is the interactive exploration. Like, I want to see this place. I want to go able to, like, go be like, poke around in it. I just don't want to have a thing killing me while I'm in a locker breathing.
You don't want to feel like you're punished for that curiosity.
Yeah. And I don't know. Yeah. That's like an odd thing. Like, I think interactivity is more important for a game than difficulty. And
but
I think it's easy to conflate the two.
Is it fun to walk around a haunted house with the lights on?
I mean, in the case of Alien, I think if we contextualize it, in the case of Alien Isolation, I would like to explore that area without the alien, because the world building was so good. Like, they put so much effort to make it exactly that era,
right?
Like, technology and everything like that, and it's very true to Ridley Scott's original, and that would be cool just to wander around. I mean, I don't think it would keep my interest for very long, but it would be cool. It'd be cool.
No, I got all my teammates murdered in Battlefront all the time because I would be like, Jabba's Palace. And I'd walk around and I was like, oh, it's the Tauntaun's head. And like they'd be like, oh, reloading, flank left or whatever. And everyone's dying. And I'm like, Star Wars.
Well, and difficulty means so many things differently now these days, where it's like a difficult game like Bloodborne, where it was intentionally built to be this way, to be difficult for you to overcome that challenge, where something like Uncharted, we were talking about before the show, is like that game, you can get through that game pretty easily, but it has these crushing levels of difficulty that are intended to just throw things at you. But that's not the way that experience is normally necessarily intended. And then, like you were sort of alluding to, Brian, you have older experiences that are now difficult surely by age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we are in a medium that can update these things and remake and remaster and do all that.
Well, it's funny because I don't know, like the idea of playing an Uncharted game on like crushing difficulty sounds completely unappealing to me.
But it's also, it feels at odds with that game as a narrative experience.
Right.
Like while I'm like soaking in character development, I don't want to be dying over and over and over and over and over.
Yeah, so you want to watch one of the Indiana Jones movies, but every 20 minutes somebody's going to pop up and punch you in the face.
Well, maybe on your fifth time watching Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, to keep it fresh. I think if like that was the base
4D experience.
If crushing was the base difficulty of Uncharted 4, then yeah, bad game design. I don't think it works for that franchise at all. But as an option for people on their fourth or fifth playthrough who are like going for trophies and are just like they've mastered that game front to back and they want something new and original, sure, go for it. But I think for something like Bloodborne, like if you walk, like if you took all the enemies out of that game and just walked through the streets, I think it would defeat the purpose of, or I like the sort of the thrill of what that game is.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think that like if you had the option right now to switch on the easiest difficulty, you would, and you'd fly through that game.
I don't know if
no,
I
you
would.
Wouldn't
really.
I don't think you would.
Yeah, no. That's the thing is, the fact that I keep coming back to this, like, just screaming yeast infection of a game is like kind of a testament to like there's something special there, and it is this
it's
weird
a box
like
quote.
But yeah. But it also, you know, it's the way that the game is meant to be played, I played through Resident Evil 2 on just normal difficulty, but there was one boss that really, really got me. Like I think I mentioned this in a couple of episodes ago, where I started with no health. Like I went into it with no health and no ammunition, so I was like really on the back foot, and I just died over and over and over and over. And I was like, oh, I could just switch down the difficulty. You know, I could and just get through it, and because it was like one of the end bosses, and just see the end of the game, or I could keep going and play it as it was meant to be played. And I kept going, and it was, you know, I eventually got him down, and it was incredibly like relieving. Like I was sweating, my heart was hammering in my chest. It was an amazing feeling.
Was it better than sex?
Yes, it was better than sex because I have terrible sex. No, it was. That's actually not true. Just for anyone out there who's listening,
you can just stop. You can just talk about.
I don't know why I'm digging this hole. No, but it, you know, some games are meant to be hard. They're meant to be challenging. They're meant to make you sweat and scream and tear your hair up. And again, it comes back to that feeling of euphoria that you have afterwards. And not every game is like that. I mean, I definitely don't want that from an Uncharted.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you're getting a different experience out of that or something like a Gone Home or a Florence. Like, there are different intentions going into each game. And like Max had said earlier, I think like the interactivity and the refinement of that is far more important than necessarily sheer difficulty.
Yeah. Yep. It's also like an accessibility thing. I mean, obviously, if you want people to experience a thing, I think like so much of what makes the FromSoft game special is even beyond difficulty, it's that they are obtuse. Like they are about hidden secrets, whether that is navigation wise, difficulty wise, or just straight up the lore being dense as hell. There's this level of like you need to kind of commune with people, whether that's calling a stranger in over the internet to help you fight a giant wet dog, or talking to your friend at work being like, hey, did you find that weird gem that makes your whip stronger or whatever? There's this kind of like communal, like it's the whole game is sort of the puzzle. But obviously, I don't think not every game should or could have that.
And also, I just want to touch on the word accessibility, because we think about accessibility as able-bodied people.
Yeah.
It's also important to think of accessibility for the huge disability community out there who play video games. And, and you know, if every game was crushingly difficult, that's going to be a real bummer for them. So it's good that we have the options.
So funny thing, I found this a while ago. The kind of creator of the Yakuza series, Toshiro Nagoshi, has on his Wikipedia page his design philosophy. There's this quote from him. It may sound strange, but I'm very bad at playing games. I used to spend a lot of money in arcades just to see the end game sequences, and I know how bad players can feel if the game is too hard too early. And so he's like expressed desire to make his games like, you know, not necessarily completely easy. And if you've tried to like 100% a Yakuza game, you know that there's always like a couple little achievements that are incredibly difficult there. But I think that it's nice to kind of recognize that the limitations of an arcade game are sort of like, there's kind of difficulty in games is kind of a holdover from that, where it was designed to make you pump in quarters. And it's when you're trying to have an experience for a player, it doesn't necessarily need to be there.
Yeah, people are not worrying outside of microtransactions about getting more money into you after you've bought the game at this point.
Yeah.
Like, you've bought in, you accept it. Yeah, it's an interesting thing that we've seen change over time. I did want to wrap that into, are any of you excited for or interested in Sekiro Shadows Die Twice? In terms of the like Bloodborne difficulty,
I am very into it. I was saying to you guys earlier when we were talking about the run of show that I played it at Gamescom, and I was so bad. I was so bad at it. Like, I've played every Souls game, and so I feel like I've got a handle on the formula. But no, like, the Sekiro is very different.
Did they drop you into like a demo build where you were sort of already spec'd out in like a certain?
No,
you were like. Was it like the very beginning of the game?
I'm pretty sure it was the very beginning from memory, but don't quote me on that. But it was definitely like early. And I was really bad because so much of that game is about countering, and countering is a difficult thing to master. I mean, it's a difficult thing to master in the Souls games, let alone having to just get it right off the bat. So I was terrible. And it was interesting because my colleague, Tristan from the Australian office, he'd never touched a Souls game because he was like, it's too difficult. Why would I do that to myself? And he breezed through that demo.
Whoa, huh.
So I don't know. Maybe it's like if you've got the Souls formula in your sort of muscle memory, maybe it's more of a challenge. I'm not sure.
I could see that. I mean, I've heard people say that the toughest one is always your first.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like your favorite Mario Kart. But like, I don't know. I've looked it up. Like, which is harder, like Dark Souls or Bloodborne or whichever, you know, where does Sekiro land on that? And I don't know. People seem to they can't agree because again, difficulty is totally subjective. I'm curious about it because obviously I want to get in on the ground floor with everybody else because we're talking about Bloodborne, a game from 2015. But at the same time, I'm like a tougher sell on samurai stuff than I am on like arcane, you know, Victorian steampunk, whatever. And it's also, I don't know, like the parrying and like the rhythm of blocking in the right time is like, that's something that I completely suck at.
Yep.
Yes. But it was something I eventually mastered, so I know that I can do it. And it's just hard.
If the game is asking you to do that sort of from the jump, it's possible you may be better early on in it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Based on the new gameplay trailer that just released this week, which I kind of wish I hadn't seen.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in there that looks like it's going to sort of make me happy as a Bloodborne fan because there's a lot of sort of larger than life grotesque.
Oh, there's a lot of that.
Monstrous nonsense to kill with your whip and hand thing.
Yeah.
So that'll be a good time.
Obviously, when people are demoing these kind of games too, they're not really taking time to poke around and explore a whole lot. Yep. Like, they kind of give you probably a more linear path demo wise. But like the stuff in the margins is what I'm interested in.
So. I really dug Neo, N-I-O-H, that Neo. and that's sort of like a precursor to something like Sekiro, but it's I don't want to say that felt more grounded in reality, but a lot of the people you fight in that game are like basic sort of samurai soldier types and not as many. Some of the bosses get into the sort of big grotesque, you know, weird horror stuff, but this looks a little more over the top and I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I'm curious to see that art style come to life in this game. I've personally never been able to get past most of the initial areas of any From Software game, so I'm excited to try that again and probably fail this time.
I think your From Software game is like the story of Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
Like being able to navigate that correctly and understand it and parse what is or isn't fact.
And it's fine if other people don't get it, because I know it.
That's hard mode.
Moving on, wanted to try another new segment on the show we're calling Memory Card, where we're going to run down an older memory for one of us here related to PlayStation. It could be anything about a specific game, a piece of hardware, a specific time in our life. And Brian, I thought you could kick that off for us. You have a story you mentioned before we start the show.
Unfortunately, we don't have a 1930s newsboy.
We'll get it. Yeah, I don't have a thing just yet.
Extra memory card.
I don't think they said that.
No, we were talking. Yeah,
I'm a time traveler.
We talked about how PlayStation has been.
Yikes on that one, am I right?
That's
ladies
right.
And gentlemen?
I love the slight delay of, yeah. that, of that sound effect.
That car almost hit
oh,
me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have a car in this new studio. We can tell you anything because it's audio only.
It doesn't matter.
No, I.
We're on the street with the car.
That's
it's going really well.
The memory car.
Anyway, back to memory.
We all love PlayStation here. If you're listening to the show, you love PlayStation. And because of that, you probably have or maybe haven't realized that PlayStation has been responsible for sort of a through line in a lot of our best memories in our lives. And I was thinking about this year is my 10-year anniversary. Next month is my 10-year anniversary at IGN. And so 10 years ago, I moved to San Francisco for the first time. I left my family, which is a big Italian guy from the East Coast with a big Italian family. That's very hard to do. All my friends, everyone I knew. And I moved to California. I mailed all my consoles, which was my PS3 and my Xbox 360 and I believe my Wii at the time. In a cardboard box, and that was a very risky move, by the way. And all my clothes in another cardboard box, and then the fourth or fifth cardboard box just had socks and a coffee pot. Stupid move. Coffee pot exploded, got glass all over the socks, and I had to throw out all my socks. I didn't know what I was doing.
It's
I never
like
moved
cross-country. It's the worst jigsaw trap I've ever
heard. It was so dumb. And so everything took a few days to arrive. And some things took like 2 or 3 weeks. So my consoles didn't arrive right away. So I was in a big empty apartment. I felt very lonely. I didn't really know anyone in the city. Opposite side of the country from everyone I knew. And my boss at the time, Will Tuttle, said, "Hey, do you have like any video games to play at home?" And I was like, "No, like my roommate and I just got like a 42-inch TV, but we like the cable guy's not here yet, so we have nothing to do." And he was like, "Why don't you just we have an extra like office PS3. Take it home." And I took it home and I like logged into it and, you know, pulled up my stuff, and it was sort of just like this weird familiar sound.
You know, I used to work at a coffee shop and they would do that with cinnamon rolls.
Yeah, exactly. And you have a flashback.
You're like, "Do you have any cinnamon rolls at home? You take some home."
And so I went from being like very lonely and very distant from everything I loved to reconnecting with something that had been there for me for a very long time and something that got me there, and that was PlayStation. And I played a bunch of PS3 games, and they also gave us, I think they gave us like the NHL hockey game that came out that year, which I hadn't played any of those games in a long time. So it was weird, but it just made me realize how important something simple and stupid it can be, like how video game comfort food can be there for you, just like Bloodborne can be there for you when you're seasonally depressed, or like the chimes and stupid alien sounds of a console booting up on the opposite side of the country from where you grew up can make you feel at home. And so, yeah, that's my little PlayStation memory.
Do you remember what you were playing?
Yeah, I just said
NHL.
I'm trying to think what else. I guess
The Last Guy.
Yeah, I was like, "What? This was like 2009?
Yeah.
I was like, "What the?
Uncharted 2?
Those were called minis then.
Probably a God of War game.
Yeah. God of War 3,
that
maybe.
That checks out. Yeah, I had dreams of From Software games and The Last of Us and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, I remember like Heavy Rain was one of the first big games that I was around for that I was at IGN and everybody was talking about at the same time. But yeah, it was really cool to sort of step into that era and be like, "Here we are."
Thank you.
That's awesome.
And eventually my clothes showed up.
Finally,
my PS3.
And you got new socks.
And now, like a rich man, I have two PlayStation 3s.
No, I brought the other one back to her.
Did you get a new coffee pot? Or?
Yeah. What if I just duct taped it? I just drank duct tape coffee for a couple years. That's why I am the way I am.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
If you listening at home have a memory you'd like to share with us on Memory Card, you can write into beyond@ign.com, put Memory Card in the subject line so we know what it's about, and we will maybe read it on the show in a future episode. Mm-hmm. Moving on, we'll end the show with Rapid Fire. Questions from this segment come from the Facebook group for Beyond. That's facebook.com/groups/podcastbeyond. You can either put in questions there. I drop a topic sort of thing in each week, or you can write into beyond@ign.com, put rapid fire in the subject line, and we'll know whether to ask them here. We're going to start off with Josiah Beiler. He asked, what do you think the likelihood of Xbox Game Pass being brought to PlayStation like it's being rumored to come to Nintendo Switches?
Not going
to
happen.
I just want, we haven't talked about the like weird Nintendo Switch Xbox thing too much here, mm-hmm. but I did want to bring that up in this case. There's no chance these two companies would work like that.
I think there's two. I think the thing is with Switch and Xbox is that there's a couple of things connecting them already. Notably Rare is a developer that they have both worked with exclusively for years. They're also, Microsoft owns Minecraft, and Minecraft came to Wii U and Switch with a massive Nintendo exclusive connection there, an entire Mario world, basically. There's like a weird history of idle animations of like characters like Banjo-Kazooie, like pulling out a DS or a Game Boy. There also isn't a ton of crossover in terms of AAA third-party games because of the way the Switch is spec'd out. And so I think there's room for one to work with the other. On PlayStation and Xbox, nothing like that.
Yeah.
They're way too close. I think they would rather fight for scraps over like little exclusive DLCs and drops until the day they're dead.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Then yeah. work with each other in any collaborative capacity.
I think it's more likely we start seeing something like a PlayStation Plus like library. That
yeah.
would be the equivalent of games or of Game Pass.
A Game Pass, yeah.
Where you're just like, you sign up for this and you get access to these things. Which is honestly, considering how long PlayStation Plus has been around. And it's not really an issue if you've had it for a while, like I imagine we have. But if you're just jumping on, it's like, and you're like, what's my first month going to be? Oh, it's a game I already played yeah. and two games I don't want to play.
Yeah.
Then it's kind of like, what are your other options there? And
yeah.
it's PlayStation Now, I guess.
I've said this before, but everyone should be actively trying to steal Game Pass at this point,
yeah.
or the entire concept of it.
It's one of the smartest ideas.
Yeah. The fact that like a yeah. game like Crackdown goes from being like, oh, I'll skip it to... I'll play it. It's a no-brainer because it's just there.
Yeah.
Or something like Just Cause 4, which launched in early December and just quietly released on Game Pass this week. That's a game we wouldn't see on PlayStation Plus for probably 6 months to a year after its release at best, if ever. And so, yeah, I think obviously that's lucrative, and I hope Sony steals it.
It's also really smart when games are either a service or a huge franchise where if they're trying to build a community –
yep.
You know, do that crack-dealer approach and have that first taste for free.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's interesting. We've seen this with it's not going to happen anymore with Disney Plus, but Disney dropping their movies on Netflix like 6 months after they were for sale.
Yeah.
And it's weird because there's this kind of trickle-down effect where it's like, you want to go see it in theaters? That's $12 a person. Okay. You want to watch it at home? Well, you can't rent it yet. It's $14 to buy it. And then it's all of a sudden it's $3 to buy it. Then all of a sudden, if you have Netflix, it's free. And then all of a sudden you want to find out what happens in Endgame because you watched Infinity War while you were hungover over Christmas break
yeah.
or whatever. You know, I don't know who's late to the party on MCU right now, but like if you're part of this, you know, if you're building these kind of ongoing these brands, you know, maybe you buy a t-shirt, maybe you buy merch, you pay attention to the next thing that they do.
Is that confirmed, by the way?
What?
The crack dealer free hit for the first user thing?
I don't know. I've never done crack. I think after Bloodborne, I might try it.
Yeah.
See how it goes.
Apparently, it's free the first time.
But no, I mean, it's
the first choice.
You know.
It comes with a shirt, too.
But no, I mean,
Beyond this week is sponsored by crack. Go to crack.com/beyond.
That's what happened in the video
code
version.
Scoville.
But no, like, I mean, with games, they just had For Honor up there. And you look at For Honor, there's like a ton of, you know, cosmetic microtransactions and stuff like that. And it's kind of an interesting way of breathing some life into a game that did have a price of admission that was like a boxed game that you paid $60 for or whatever when it came out that isn't quite turning it free to play, but it's like free to play this month.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be such a smart thing, especially as we're going to a new generation. Say, obviously, a game like Horizon Zero Dawn sold 10 million copies, like it sold well, but say that was available on a PlayStation Game Pass and everyone who bought a PS5 could play that right before the next Horizon comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'd be such a smart marketing move.
The Frozen Wilds is still $20.
Yes. Yeah, you still have to.
I mean, I'm probably going to buy the Bloodborne DLC in 3 years when I finish that game.
It's always on sale.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to find it. Moving on, Yair Donan asks, if you could go all Men in Black, I assume Men in Black, and re-experience a game for the first time, what game would it be? For me, it's Mass Effect 2. That was Yair. Oh,
man, probably The Last of Us to think about stuff in recent memory, because that's a game I've tried to replay a bunch of times, and I just can't, because I feel like the story hit me so hard the first time that trying to re-experience that is just sort of chasing ghosts.
I'll never live up to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel for me probably the first Silent Hill was it had an extremely profound effect on me, and I don't know whether it was the age I was or, but I was just really shaken by that game, because I hadn't seen anything like it. I'd come from Resident Evil, from that sort of vibe, you know, like shooting monsters in the head.
Yep.
I mean, I know you do that in Silent Hill as well, but it's just very different. It's very unnerving. There are scenes that are just stuck in my memory, and I cried in Silent Hill, which is like, I know that's weird, but there's a certain scene. Anyway, and yeah, I guess for me it would be that. That was the first thing that popped into my head.
Mm-hmm. Metal Gear Solid 5, hands down. I think about that game probably every day. I think I've talked about how special that friggin' game is. I want to write a book about it or something.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people didn't finish it. Neither did Kojima.
For me, it would be a little bit of a cheat, but I'd like to erase the entire Kingdom Hearts franchise from memory just to see what it would be like to play that first game.
That's like wishing for 1,000 wishes. That's cheating.
I know, but it's just like the idea of coming to that franchise completely new right now.
Right.
As a lifelong Disney fan.
But that's, it's difficult because it's like a time and a place. Like, that's the thing. If I played Silent Hill now, I'd be like, this sucks because it's so old and janky. But, you know, I'd love to sort of be that age at that time in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's the tricky one is are we playing these games for the first time, or are you playing them for the first time in 2019?
Say whenever you play them. Yeah. Originally. Yeah. In that case, I'd actually do Wind Waker. That's one of my favorite games of all time. And like, yes, it's great that they updated the sail on the HD version in Wii U. But like, I still, as a kid, spent an entire summer just sailing around that sea, just trying to find every little nook and cranny of those islands.
I jumped back into Metal Gear Solid 2 just for the hell of it, which is one of my favorite games ever, which is not one of my favorite games to play in 2019 because I completely forgot that the controls for that are completely doing their own thing where you can't walk and chew gum or shoot guns. You have to stop and go into first person to aim, which is just completely jarring. I was also the only way to play it current gen is with the 360 HD collection played on an Xbox One backwards compatible.
Right.
I can't believe that's not on fucking PlayStation. That's infuriating.
Yeah, it makes me so mad. And also, I feel like I feel so dirty playing that game with that controller.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy that collection hasn't come to PS4. To wrap things up, Sean Nazareth asks, are discless consoles a commodity we will have to learn to live with, or do hard copy discs have still enough relevancy to stand the test of time? And obviously, we've had those rumors of a new Xbox coming out this year, possibly, that's discless. We've always seen that as like streaming is the future, all that. Do we think that will happen anytime soon? I think it's like inevitable at some point.
It's inevitable, but I don't think it's going to be in the next few years.
Yeah.
That's my thinking. Too many people still don't have that kind of internet in the world.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's obviously the biggest barrier is that I think that people are more and more willing to go all digital every single day. I think that's happening every single day. I think that we are probably 10 to 15 years away from disc-based games being a boutique-y thing. I think it's like if you look at something like Limited Run Games right now, which is specifically making physical versions of small indies that will never get physical versions otherwise, I think that will be programs like that will be by and large the way people
get. Like LPs, like records.
Yeah. And so the difference with records is that that is one format across one medium that has existed. You can buy a record from 70 years ago and it'll work on a modern record player. You know, it might shatter when you pick it up, but it'll work. Whereas video games change mediums every 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Like I can't play my Wii games on my Switch or you know, my PS3 games on my PS4, whatever it is.
And like we were talking about at the top of the show,
yep.
If the game got a patch or something and you're not connected.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And so I think, and this sucks to say this, but I think that people are going to have to relinquish the concept of ownership with video games and start to treat them like rentable experiences, like we treat movies and meals and the laundromat and other things. Like, I think it's like it's going to become this moving target. It's already gotten to the point with games like Resident Evil 4 on iPhone where it just stopped working one day on my phone and it will never work again. They'll never update it. Mm. There's nothing I can do about that besides buy a phone from 6 OSs ago. Mm. And so that sucks because people want to have a thing on their shelves, but I think eventually, especially with disc rot and with games needing updates, that's going to disappear. Luckily, with internet, you have a while, so keep buying up those discs. But that is where we are heading.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we'll
don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah, like you said originally, Lucy. I think it will be the biggest barrier will be just the proliferation of accessible good internet throughout the world. Will be one of the biggest changes.
Yeah. One last thing I'll add to that.
the overwhelming majority of games released nowadays are digital only.
Yeah.
They do not get physical versions at all. If you look at the PlayStation drop, you look at the store there, 90% of those games will never see a disc release.
Yeah.
They are just digital games. And so that's I think the tables have turned on that.
Yeah,
so.
I think we'll see the like small boutique things and also the biggest of the big probably for the longest, like the first party games and stuff like that. Thank you all so much for joining me for Beyond Episode 582 in this new audio-only era. When we're not recording the show, Max, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter, Max Scoville, or Instagram, which is also Max Scoville. I've been putting up pictures of my toy collection and my hobbies and my dog.
You're very good at making amazing models. I don't know how you do that.
Thank you.
I do not have a steady hand to do that.
Yeah, but it's a lot of practice building my robots.
Brian, where can people find you?
You can find me at Agent Bizzle. I'm also on Nintendo Voice Chat every single week. I was on this week's episode of Podcast Unlocked. And Max and I are working on a new IGN show thing.
Are we allowed to say what it's called?
No, I don't think so.
No, we can't talk about it yet.
But
one day.
You'll love it.
It's going to be great. It's going to be fun.
It's familiar.
I'm excited. Yeah. And Lucy, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Luce O'Brien. That's LuceOBRIEN.
And I am at JM Dornbush on Twitter and Instagram. Remember, Beyond is live every week on Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Pacific currently. We'll see if that time changes. We'll let you know, obviously, in advance. If you have questions or comments or anything about the show, be sure to write into beyond@ign.com, and we'll be able to read those and possibly read them on the show itself. Thank you all so much for listening. And as always, Beyond.
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 There it is.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.